Tune into Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hey everyone, welcome to Lunch Agenda on Full Service Radio. We're broadcasting live from the Line Hotel in DC, and I'm your hardworking host, Kiko Bourne. It feels good to be back. It's been 2 weeks. I was in Iceland with my husband and daughter. And I'll just give you a little bit of Iceland news from the food perspective, if in case you're curious about going or about what they eat there. Black bread was big, and I definitely tend to like black bread. And this was different from anything I'd ever had before. It was kind of anisey, sweet, so I'd kind of consider it like the licorice of black bread. And they sold it at convenience stores, and we went to a spa where they baked the bread under the ground. And so that was fun to try. They definitely eat a lot of fish. Cod is huge, and lamb, and there are lambs everywhere, and I made friends with them and bought at them, and they're also still serving whale and puffin, which I did not try. And then they don't eat a lot of vegetables there, I can tell you that. So we did eat at the biggest mushroom farm that supplies mushrooms to every Domino's Pizza in Iceland. They say that's their craziest day of the year, where they cut their Domino's mushrooms. And thank you, Wendy Stewart, for that great recommendation. So I do recommend Iceland, but maybe not necessarily for your culinary adventuring per se. But I never felt too far away from Lunch Agenda listeners, because while I was gone, I fielded a bunch of great ideas from all of you about our current series, Big Food Stars. So as I've said last week, or last show, the name refers to big companies doing it right. Food system types like myself are trained to be skeptical about big corporations that grow or make or retail food. And so in this series, Big Food Stars, we're looking at companies that are breaking that mold. And my hope is that if more attention goes to the good players in this category, it will steer others in that direction. So that's the goal of, that's the food activism angle on Lunch Agenda today. Last week, we learned about how convenience stores, or last episode, we learned about how convenience stores are trying to make the healthy choice the easy choice. And today, we'll continue the series by looking at a growing sector of the restaurant industry. We live in the era of fast casual. These are the chains that don't offer full table service, but advertise higher quality food than fast food restaurants with fewer frozen or processed ingredients. So my guests today will explore what it looks like for a fast casual chain to grow responsibly, from 1 to 3 stores or 3 restaurant locations to over 30 in less than 6 years. At the end of the episode, hopefully we'll have time to discuss a couple of the businesses I've heard you tell me about that you feel are doing it right. So we're going to take a quick, or we're going to quickly kick it off with Kiko's food news, and then we'll introduce our guests. First headline for today. Trump's trade war is shutting food makers out of foreign markets, with other countries raising tariffs to American products and signing trade deals without the United States. The dairy industry is one that now faces substantial tariffs on products it exports to Mexico, Canada, and other countries that are retaliating against the president's steel and aluminum tariffs. Dairy farmers and cheesemakers are growing so anxious about what will happen to all of the milk and cheese they churn out and typically sell overseas that they're even talking about the extreme scenario of having to dump their milk in the fields. So I know that we in the food industry are just kind of watching different categories of foods kind of weather this storm in the current administration. Speaking of international food trade, I thought it was interesting to share an article that I read on Associated Press, which reported that the U.S. imported more seafood in 2017 than any year prior. So that's 6 billion pounds of seafood, which is over $21 billion worth, versus only 3.6 billion that we exported pounds. That trade deficit is growing, so it's just related to the administration's policies around trade and tariffs. Zooming away from national into DC food news, You probably heard the juicy update a couple weeks ago that Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders and her family was asked to leave the Red Hen in Lexington, Virginia, because of her involvement in the Trump administration's policies like separating migrant children from their parents. But did you know that the Red Hen in my own neighborhood in D.C., which is in Bloomingdale, was vandalized and ridiculed by critics, confusing it with that Red Hen? The DC Red Hen had to go to great lengths to calm the critics down. They posted a sign on the window telling Huckabee Sanders that she's welcome to eat there. And they even, you know, used Twitter to tweet things like, quote, "You have the wrong restaurant, separate companies, separate businesses, separate owners, no affiliation. DC businesses are prohibited from discriminating against people for political affiliation because we are a federal district." So I thought that was actually interesting, and I was surprised they were actively inviting her in until I learned that was the policy. Finally, locally, and much more crucially, I think, some food stamp recipients may soon lose access to farmers market benefits right at peak farmers market season. And this actually isn't just locally, it's nationally. The Austin-based company that processes about 40% of SNAP transactions at farmers markets nationwide said it will end its service by July 31st, which will leave about 1,700 markets that offer SNAP with no way to serve low-income customers. So the contract has been awarded to a new provider, but it's going to be a while until that provider has the technology working, and it's devastating timing. We're going to take a quick break on that note. When we come back, I'm really excited to introduce Daniel Abelson from Honeygrow and Maddie Morales from the Common Market to talk about big food, fast casual, doing it right. Stay tuned.
Original music produced by RecTech. Find his music at soundcloud.com/RecTech. WRECKTECH. Coming right back with Lunch Agenda. Stay tuned.
Welcome back. You've tuned into Lunch Agenda, Full Service Radio's food activism show. I'm your host, Kiko Bourne, and today is the second episode of our Big Food Stars series, where we're holding up examples of big food companies, quote, doing it right. I thought it would be interesting to look at a case study in the restaurant sector for the series, to learn about how a company thinks about scaling a concept nationally while still operating as responsibly as when they had one or two locations. So to help me frame the topic, I actually turned to my DC buddy, Maddie Morales, a few weeks back. Maddie works as the outreach coordinator for the Common Market, a food distributor that provides institutional partners in the DMV, that's the District, Maryland, and Virginia, with local food to serve in their meal programs. So from public schools to farm-to-table restaurants, their work increases farm viability for family farms in the Mid-Atlantic region. Welcome, Maddie.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Thank you so much. I know this is not your first time in the full service studio.
Oh, but it's just as fun. This place is the best.
Yes, it is. It is. It's great to have you and your expertise, because I really do feel that you sit with a view on both the restaurant side and the producer side that I'm going to enjoy bringing into the show. So you have a window into the dollars and cents of making it as a farmer or food maker, and you have a window into the real sourcing practices of restaurants and institutional buyers. You told me that you thought the fast casual chain Honeygrow would be a good one to profile on Good Food Stars. Why did you think that?
Yeah, so we at the Common Market, some of our long-standing partners have been all of the Honeygrow restaurants, not only in the D.C. area, but in Philly, where our organization started, and also where Honeygrow was born. And so from the beginning, we've been working closely alongside them. And as trends in food change and chefs can change, they've been a really consistent partner for us. So I was excited to dig into why that is and sort of share that story of a success for us from the beginning.
Hmm, interesting. Mm-hmm. And so you told me the guy to talk to there was mm-hmm. Daniel Abelson.
Indeed.
And so I reached out to him, and he nobly trained down from Philly today to join us. Welcome, Daniel.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So Daniel's the purchasing and logistics manager at Honeygrow, and he's been with Honeygrow for the last 3.5 years, helping the company grow from 3 restaurants to 32 in that time. His primary job function is to manage the distribution network of food, beverage, disposables, and restaurant supplies for every Honeygrow location. And he also has told me that he assists with projects like delivery partnerships, menu rollouts, and sales analysis. So, Daniel, how did the Honeygrow Common Market relationship start?
It's actually one that's been in place since before I even started with the company.
Okay.
But it's one that we've grown tremendously since I started. So fortunately for us, Common Market has grown as we have. So they've grown into the D.C. market, and where we've also grown. They've mm-hmm. grown up into New York, where we are as well. So it's been a very natural partnership for us to continue to grow and continue to get those same products, but across a wider reach than we had been able to previously.
Right. Which one was here first? I feel like last year was the year that I heard of both being in D.C. for the first time.
So our very first one opened in Pentagon City in 2016.
Okay.
And then we opened Chinatown, D.C. And then last year, we also had a few in Baltimore now. One in Rockville just opened this year. We have one that just opened in Reston, Virginia, and one coming later this year in Tysons, Virginia.
Nice. So, congratulations.
Thank you. A lot of growth in this market, which is really exciting for
us. Yeah, I've been to the Pentagon City and Chinatown
awesome.
Locations. It was delicious. Truly delicious what I had there.
Glad to hear it.
So one of the biggest challenges, Daniel, in a growing category like fast casual is differentiation, right? So I imagine there's only room for so many brands in a customer's mind. What makes Honeygrow unique from the others in this category?
You know, I think the key part for us is we really do believe in our motto, which is honest eating and growing local.
And say that again slower.
Honest eating and growing local
okay.
is our motto.
Thank you.
And that's something that's been ingrained in our DNA since the very beginning. And we've been able to fulfill that through all of our sourcing initiatives, working with partners like the Common Market, working within our other distribution network to find local products that are available and bring them, you know, through our seasonal menu offerings. So right mm-hmm. now we have a summer seasonal salad that features tons of local products and some that are coming a little bit later in the summer with watermelons, tomatoes, corn. We're really excited about that dish and are excited to be able to feature products from the Common Market and other vendors in that dish through our local list in all of our restaurants that actually features the name of the farm, the product, and the items that we're getting for that individual season.
Cool. And we'll definitely talk all about your approach to local sourcing. I have to say, though, that from a customer's perspective, going into your spaces, what jumps out at me is the technology. And, you know, we select our ingredients and our items on screens, and then very friendly staff members make that food. But to me, Honeygrow kind of seems ahead of the pack on the tech side.
Yeah, that's been a huge part of what we started with. You know, we've come through a few evolutions of our Kiest technology, and we're continuing to make it stronger and better. But that's the big part that our guests love to do. They love to be able to see and feel and pick those ingredients. And as those seasons change, those new offerings become available, being able to feature and highlight those things on the kiosk and also in other spaces in the restaurant has been a critical part for
right,
us.
Right, right. So the Honeygrow website says, you won't find a freezer in our stores. And if we can buy it locally, we do. Why? Because it tastes better, not because it's cool or trendy to say. We couldn't care less what the other fast casual guys and gals do. So let's talk about these other guys and gals for a minute.
Sure.
Do you see other fast casual groups prioritizing local sourcing?
Yeah, and I think it's becoming more and more popular as the trend continues to grow to provide local products. I think the customer's more and more interested in that because it's becoming more widely available than it ever has been in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more interest and awareness of that of those items now than ever before.
Right, sure. And you know, I will say that it does seem that a lot of the chains are taking it in their own directions. I know that Fresh & Co., for example, bought its own farm on Long Island recently. I don't know if you'd heard that, but, you know, so that it could be hyper-local. And I know that Sweetgreen's menu changes several mm-hmm. times a year based on what's in season as well. So my question that I hope you can tell me is, when I go into these kinds of places, I wonder how you keep the prices as low as you're able to while having food the quality of high-end restaurants.
Yeah.
What's the trick here?
it's really hard, to be honest. It's been one of the greatest challenges that I've had in the couple of years with the company. You know, you eventually, with your growth, are able to leverage pricing on some of your higher volume items, and in doing so, can spend more on those incredible ingredients, the local products that we get from Common Market and other partners, and to bring those to life to make those dishes shine. But it does not, not an easy task whatsoever, and has taken a lot of time and effort on our end to find the right opportunities, the right partners to get the prices that we need to sell a bowl of food for $10 at the end of the day, which is certainly a low price point to be able to feature the quality that we do.
So take us through, and I'd love to hear from either of you, what happens when you, Daniel, decide I just passed a farm in Lancaster County that is making a cheese that I'd love to offer, and how, and I think Honey Grow should put it on our sandwiches. What do you do? Or, you know, you've met with Maddie. Maddie introduces you to a new, you know, apple grower, and you want to buy that through Common Market for the stores. How do you handle the ordering?
So there are two kind of separate components. A lot of the items on our menu, we will change throughout the year to feature seasonal products. So as soon as Common Market's availability list features blueberries, Maddie and the other people at Common Market will let our restaurants know, hey, blueberries are available now. We can add these to your next order. And they're able to fulfill from there. From HQ support, we also share that information with our restaurants and say, hey, you guys can now order your blueberries through Common Market. They're coming from New Jersey. It's an incredible product.
So are you ordering at HQ, or are the individual restaurants placing the orders?
So we have kind of a dual approach. Instruction all comes from HQ. So we tell them, hey, here's what's available to you locally right now from whom. And the restaurants place the individual orders based on their needs at that level.
Oh, cool.
So if I don't need blueberries today, I'm not going to buy them today, but tomorrow I might. So letting them know, hey, here's who you can buy these products from locally. And that's the Common Market 99% of the time.
Got it. Anything you'd add, Maddie?
No, just that's where I get to hop in and connect with all of the stores and the store managers at each location to let them know as well, like what, and then they manage our ordering and delivery schedules and kind of all the nitty gritty fun logistics of the distribution side.
Do you feel that there's a big range on the part of the store managers in terms of their interest in insourcing the local items? And, you know, do they have a certain amount of money, a pot of money to spend, and they need to kind of play with, well, I can only buy this much locally because the local is more expensive, or how does that go down?
So on our end, we kind of make that instruction to them and let them know that this is what you should be buying. So we have systems in place that can actually lock in preferred vendors or not preferred vendors for individual products.
Okay.
So in season, if we should be buying blueberries from Common Market, our restaurants don't have the ability to buy blueberries from anybody
else.
So they're restricted to purchasing that single product from a single vendor.
Okay.
Unless we have multiple vendors that are sourcing local, which can be the case in, with certain products in certain seasons. But the goal really is to make our restaurants know that that's the outlet that they should be using to get that product.
That
and they
makes
don't necessarily have a way around it. We know our budgets, we know what money we can and cannot spend, and we tell our restaurants what to do based on that information.
So can a restaurant manager say, I hate fruit in salads? I am one of those people that just, why did anyone ever think to put a strawberry in a salad and never do it at their location?
No.
Okay.
And there are no items that they can buy that aren't approved by HQ and kind of controlled from that level.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which I think, if I can add, I think really distinguishes our relationship with Honey Grow versus some other restaurants or other partners generally, because there are products that the Honey Grow stores, like blueberries, are a specialty, but then there are other products that they're sourcing from us all year round. So I can expect to get orders from each one of the Honey Grows on a weekly basis, which is really an amazing partnership to have. So while they do go above and beyond on some of those specialty products, there are a bunch of staple products that they're getting, that they're relying on us for all the time.
So what are some of those? Paint a better picture.
Yeah. Well, one of the bulk or the staples is tofu, and yogurt for all.
Who makes tofu in the Mid-Atlantic region?
It's a producer called Fresh Tofu. They get their soybeans in New York and then they process it in a facility, in Pennsylvania.
So cool.
Yeah.
I've been lucky to visit a couple of times. It's a pretty incredible
Very
operation.
Cool.
Yeah.
I was always sad leaving the West Coast to leave this amazing tofu company called Hodo Soy, and I didn't know we had our corollary.
Well, if you want a 24 bulk pack, I am your girl.
Whoa.
Yeah, so that's one of the items that we're buying mm-hmm. year-round. There are a handful of others, including our yogurt, as Maddie said. We get some of our lettuces year-round. And then throughout the season, some of our cheese, and then throughout the seasons, featuring local items that come available mm-hmm. to help get those trucks out to our restaurants at least once a week, if not twice, in some of our higher volume units.
Awesome.
Yeah, and what the job of HQ is to really protect that. So even though there may be shifts in management in each store, they will always come to us for those products.
And Maddie, how has Honeygrow's constant orders, their constant business, mm-hmm. allowed Common Market to improve the financial viability of farmers in this area?
Yeah.
You know, can you tell us one or two stories of a farmer or a food maker for whom this has been a game changer?
Yeah, definitely. And talking about the cheese, because everybody loves cheese, but our friends at Kirchenberg Dairy in Pennsylvania, they were really able to, so they make goat cheese. So the Chev cheese at Honeygrow is all from Kirchenberg Dairy. And when they started, they were also a smaller farm. But as Honeygrow grew in demand, they also were able to scale up. And we've been able to have a really close connection between them and Honeygrow. And there's even been conversations around making a specialty cheese for Honeygrow, because we know that they are this consistent partner. And we as an organization are able to really put in a lot of resources on our end to make sure that we're being the type of distributor that our favorite and really, great partners can utilize.
Nice. Daniel, what are the challenges of adhering to a local sourcing program while you're growing as quickly as you have, becoming a big food company, a big food star, and how have you managed to overcome these challenges?
I think the challenges in the day-to-day is timing, right? Because some of these products are only available for very short seasons,
sure.
or they're available for a minute, they come right out of stock, then they're right back in stock just based on, hey, we had a horrible rainstorm or a horrible heat wave. So there are a lot of logistical challenges that come with that and being able to manage that. But because it's so ingrained in who we are and what we do, it's never been I've never had a second thought to do anything but this. And so as we've grown and opened in Chicago and Boston, we follow that same footprint of how can we source as locally as possible, find a great network of partners, vendors, farmers to work with,
right.
and then make sure that their products are featured across our menu in as many places as we can possibly find. While still remaining true to who we are and also delivering a great product for $10, because we do have to make money.
Right. So you talk about how ingrained it is as a priority. So it must come from the founders, right?
Absolutely.
What's the origin story? Who were they? Why are they so adamant about, paying what it needs to, what it costs to source locally and from small producers?
I think when we started, it was a huge differentiation point for us, and it's been so critical for us since day one. We've had a localist in our restaurant saying, here are all the products we source locally. We wanted to be transparent. We want our guests to know that when they walk in, this is exactly what we're sourcing locally in this time period or this day. Mm-hmm. So our guests can say, oh wow, I'm going to have some fresh Jersey blueberries, or I'm going to have some great kale from Pennsylvania today when they walk into one of our restaurants.
And so if you list an ingredient on the board, mm-hmm. like if you say, I don't know how you word it, but...
Yeah, so we'll say, for example, it'll say blueberries, the name of the blueberry farm we're getting from, city and state that farm lives in.
And so is that saying, is that, vowing to the customer that every blueberry you're going to get in this store is from this farm?
So we do it seasonally, right? So for the most part, when you see an item on that list, it is 100% in all of our restaurants at that time period in that specific unit. Obviously, right now we've changed our approach. So if you see a blueberry on there, it's going to be for the season. We're getting blueberries from really end of June through August. Is that right?
Something in that ballpark.
That's critical for us to make sure that our guests know, hey, for this season, we're going to have this product on that board. We mm-hmm. change it once a quarter so that our guests know, hey, here are the new items that are available for this time period. So it's not just walking up in the middle of December, seeing blueberries on the board and wondering, that can't possibly be true, can it? Because then it's not the right season.
Right. Okay, so it is a promise to us
it
as
really
customers.
Is. And it's critical. And that transparency is really important to us. And we work really hard to make sure that list is as long as it possibly can be, which in the winter months, you can imagine, is a little bit more challenging. But in the summer, it's a lot easier, especially in the Northeast with so much local produce coming. And, we have a really excellent culinary team that's dedicated to using these local ingredients and adding them to our menu each quarter to really feature and highlight them in the best way and best season possible.
And what do you think is the most important part of the staff's knowledge of the menu? Like, how are you supporting your workforce in store to, you know how important the local food is, or just what are your priorities there?
Yeah, so actually very recently, a few months ago, we had a district meeting for our DC and Maryland managers in which Maddie actually came to speak to them, to talk to them more in depth about the products that we're using, the products that we're getting from them, who they're coming from and why it's important, how our support has helped them grow into additional markets as well.
Nice.
So we try to keep our teams as aware as we possibly can. And we like to, honor some of our, best performing managers and taking them on farm tours or to meeting some of our vendors. We had the fresh tofu trip actually last year. We took a handful of our top performing general managers to see that process that are, buying this product multiple times a week in high volume all year round.
Right,
they actually get
to
see where it was made, where it originated. It really helps kind of drive that point home to everybody.
Absolutely. So is there any other area that, that Honeygrow is really proud of that you would want to highlight in this context of big food stars, that you think is an example of how big corporations should operate?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's how can we just continue to find the best possible products and put them into food for our guests? Because at the end of the day, that's what matters most. Our guests walking out happy, enjoying their food, because that's what we're here for. So whether that's sourcing really awesome olive oils from a company out in California instead of sourcing an international product, or sourcing as locally as we possibly can, it all ends up leading to a superior product and a better product for our guests, and that's what we go to work
for. What California olive oil?
It's called California Olive Ranch.
Ah,
it is fantastic.
One of my best
stuff.
Best friends. Do you know Maya Hirschbein?
I do not.
She does a lot of their olive oil sales. So
awesome. Yeah, they have been a really great partner with us for the last couple of years, and their olive oils are in every one of our sauces and dressings at both Honeygrow and our Mini Grow concept.
And
well,
I personally know that when I go to the grocery store and I'm sifting through the olive oil options, I buy that olive oil, but it's a lot pricier than many of the other choices. And so that's a huge decision when you're doing it for the magnitude you are.
Absolutely.
Last really quick question. What is Mini Grow and why did the group launch it?
Yeah, so Mini Grow is designed to help speed up our operation for higher, higher density markets. So we launched three of them in New York City first, the end of last year. It is a very similar model where we're still serving and focusing on noodles and greens, but an elevated culinary aspect for us. So we have some really incredible ingredients that are all mostly slow cooked products. That have a lot of flavor. So you'll actually walk down the line still picking a really great, incredible noodle, or we also offer zoodles, and we're launching some new exciting products as well.
Tell
very
the listeners
soon.
What zoodles are.
Zucchini noodles. Mm-hmm. Spiralized zucchini noodles. They're delicious.
So
and our,
hot.
Our guests love them very much.
Yep.
You pick from a lot of really delicious proteins, add your toppings, and walk right out rather than waiting for your food to be cooked. So we sped up that operation.
So it's kind of like a New York bodega where you it's like just self-serve.
We have you walk down an assembly line.
Okay.
Yeah, so right now we have 6 units. We have 3 in New York City, 2 in Boston, and 1 in Chicago.
How are they doing?
They're doing really well so far, and we have some really exciting menu changes coming in July in New York, and then in August for our other markets, which we're really, really looking forward to.
Can you give Lunch Agenda listeners a preview of any of it?
We have some spiralized beet noodles that are coming out, which are really beautiful and have some amazing color.
I feel like kids would love those.
Yeah, and some really delicious new sauces as well. So
nice.
I'm looking forward to it. It's been a big project of ours of late over at HQ.
Nice.
Cool.
So I would like to ask each of you for your agenda items, which is the question I ask every Lunch Agenda guest to answer before the episode is over as their opportunity to tell our listeners, hey, here's one thing you can do to improve the food system. So who would like to go first?
I got it.
Ladies.
All right. I would encourage listeners to just ask the question of restaurants and where your food is coming from and truly ask, because even, marketing is beautiful and great, but to really get the facts and know and understand why people are making decisions. And it's amazing how many chefs I am now working with because they've had enough interest from really educated, smart, and caring people that are in their restaurants or in their stores. And so ask the question.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, you probably, Daniel and Maddie, mm-hmm. both pay a lot of attention to which food establishments you walk into that list the sourcing mm-hmm. and which ones don't. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if the trend is, it's increasing to list, on a sit-down restaurant menu, mm-hmm. the source, or whether, that was a big thing 5 years ago and now restaurants are feeling like it's not as necessary with their precious mm-hmm. menu real estate. But I do always... I do often feel like we assume good sourcing because there's beautiful decor, mm-hmm. or we've just heard that this chef is the best, or, you know, everyone's lining up out the door. And it's just, it's, we can't make that assumption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you can get caught up in the buzzwords, certainly, right. especially mm-hmm. with as many fast casuals that are popping up as there are. But as Maddie said, asking the question to really understand, or, you know, if the restaurant is providing a list of those items that they're sourcing locally, you can hopefully trust and believe that that's exactly what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. and what's their version of that buzzword? So when they say local, absolutely. What does that mean?
Uh-huh.
When they say sustainable, what does that mean?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Touché. Over to you, Daniel.
Mine is to support local food. It is on topic. Yeah. It felt right. I do very much in my day-to-day. Working for this company for 3.5 years has made me appreciate and love local food even more. And so however often you can, get your hands on it and enjoy it while it's in season.
Well, now's the time.
Yeah.
So listeners can stay in touch and follow the action of Maddie and of Daniel, both on Instagram and Twitter. They're Common MKT and Honey Grow and HG Mini Grow. If you want to follow those beet zoodles, did I say that right?
They're technically beet, spiralized beet noodles.
Okay.
However, they look like a zoodle, but they're beets. That's great.
And I do have a moment now to just share a few of the great ideas I heard from our listeners about other big food stars out there in this country. So Newman's Own is the first I heard, and a friend named Jesse Flo McDonald, who's a freelance event manager and private chef in San Francisco, said they use good ingredients and the organic line doesn't take any profit. So thank you, Jesse, for putting that on our radar. And I did kind of go back and do a little bit of looking around at what they stand for. And they've been around since 1982, a very important year in this world's history, if I do say so. I joined the world that year. And their site advertises, quote, our 100% of profits to charity commitment is one of two founding values upon which Newman's Own is built, the other being quality will always trump the bottom line. So I really like that. Thanks, Jesse. The other idea, or two other ideas, I heard that Bob's Red Mill is one that is celebrated as really a good big food player. So that one I heard from Jenna Zimmerman, who is the creator of this awesome newsletter called The Pickle. I encourage you to check it out. It profiles one food every week, and it's really fun, and there are lots of, what are they called? Gifts, those videos.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, she really holds them up because they're employee owned. So indeed, they were established in 78 and it's employee owned. It's in Milwaukee, Oregon ever since. Finally, Chobani. So Amy Showalter, who's a Virginia-based baker and farmer, said that they understand cultures and fermentation better than what she's seen on that scale. And I think that she really knows because she, I believe, has a dairy background. So Chobani was, you know, founded by a Turkish immigrant in 2007 in upstate New York at a time when, you know, as most of us know, Greek yogurt was tiny, less than 1% of yogurt sales in the U.S., but it grew quickly, and today over half of U.S. yogurt sales are Greek yogurt, and the company has a revenue of about $1.5 billion after Danone. So among its amazing socially responsible practices, it gave, in 2016, it decided to give away 10% of the company to its employees. It offers men and women generous parental leave. It hires refugees from Myanmar, Thailand, and Somalia, among other countries. And actually, just last week, I read a New York Times article that they're parting ways with the private equity firm that invested big time in 2014 in order to give them more control over what they're doing. So definitely a good one to watch. Thanks, Amy, for putting that on the radar of the series. So one more time, before we close up today's episode, I'll ask that if you listeners know about good work being done by big companies to impact how food is grown, made, purchased, served, or consumed, please let me know. We have one more episode of the series, and you can DM me at KikoBuff on Instagram. You can contact me via my website, Kiko's Food News. I'd really love to keep the conversation going. I should have asked Maddie and Daniel whether you have any others that you'd want to throw into the mix, put you on the spot.
Honey Grow all the way.
Common Market.
Common Market is not a big food corporation.
Hey, they are growing very quickly.
Look, are they? Okay, prove me wrong. Prove me wrong. That would be amazing.
If nonprofits count, put us in the ring.
How does Common Market measure its growth? I mean, I guess sales.
Sales is one, but we're also expanding to new cities, so new hubs. We're actually celebrating our 10th birthday this year.
Felicitations.
Gracias. So 10 years ago, started in the Philly hub, and then since then have done the expansion to this area from that same hub, but then opened another hub in Atlanta.
Oh.
And this year we just opened in Houston, Texas.
Wow.
And there are more cities on the horizon. So hopefully, I mean, that's definitely a very measurable growth
big
trajectory.
Yeah.
That's really great. Who knows, maybe Honeygrow and Common Market will continue to penetrate new markets together.
You sure hope bet so. We will.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been Kiko on Lunch Agenda with Maddie Morales, Daniel Abelson. It's been a great time hearing about Honeygrow's growth and how it's really kept its principles forefront through that growth, and Common Market's amazing mission to support businesses doing it right. So we'll see you next time on Lunch Agenda. Have a great day, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening.